Oh my lord, I thought this was a kid's movie. Why are the bunnies biting each other? In honor of The Wildlife, a Belgian-French animated retelling of Robinson Crusoe that's apparently been dubbed and is being put out into theaters this weekend. Who knew? What's a weird, lesser-known kid's movie that you loved when you were younger?
I'm Katie Rich, and I don't know if the 1969 Pippi Longstocking movie is obscure, but I remember watching it and still have the theme song stuck in my head, so that counts.
And I'm Matt Patches, and I'm going to go with a word I could never say. Animalympics! That's right. A made-for-TV animated special from the director of Tron about animals competing in various sports that kind of got a theatrical release, but kind of didn't. Came out on home video and includes a joke about a gymnastics coach bear who wants to hang himself.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah, it's serious.
Grim.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good. Then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Fighting in the War Room. This is episode 133 for Tuesday, September 7th, and 95 years ago today, in Atlantic City, New Jersey, the first Miss America pageant, a two-day event, was held. Just imagine if Donald Trump was around for that. I don't know what he would say. He wouldn't say, what does he say, good looking? He would say, she's the bee's knees.
Huge.
Huge. He would still just say huge. Hey, if you haven't guessed, we have a returning favorite, actually not a favorite, one of the co-hosts of the podcast.
Wow, not especially liked, but still here.
What? I'm trying to think of the equivalent on TV. Has like George Clooney coming back to ER.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like that. So you wouldn't call him a guest star, would you? No.
Yeah, returning icon.
That's true.
Icon.
An icon. Katie Rich, You're back.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that I'm back for good. I'm still on leave, so theoretically I could just make this a quick drive by. It all depends on how I learn to get my baby to sleep.
It depends if your baby starts wailing in the middle of this episode.
Yeah, he's sitting right next to me, so he might make a cameo if everyone's lucky.
It feels
likely that over the course of the rest of this podcast, my podcasting life, he will make an appearance at some point. So keep listening.
Well, we will actually be talking about that soon enough, but let me read the one quick review we got. And I know that we have many foreign reviews that we have not done our homework for and actually gone to the alternate iTunes reviews pages to check. So I know people have been tweeting at us. I apologize. We're irresponsible. Maybe.
But David went to the Czech Republic this summer. He should have
gotten written reviews sent to him while he was overseas. Now, people can obviously put those reviews on our Facebook page. I've been posting. I've been getting better at that. For some reason, we're very bad at posting our episodes on Facebook, where people could be having back and forth, but I am started to be doing that. So you can leave Facebook comments, or you could go on fightinginthewarroom.com and actually leave reviews or start chatter there, because people will occasionally fight in their own mini war rooms in the comment section there, which is quite fun. So there are many options, and I will check them. But for all the global reviews, I apologize. We will collect them. Just alert us on Twitter at FITWR. See, look at all the plugging I'm doing here.
Yeah, really.
But we have we have one new-ish review. We got a boatload last week, and please leave them. This is the moment when all the summer podcast debuts are over. We can climb back to the top if people start leaving more reviews or tell a friend. That's a great thing to do.
There are summer podcast debuts?
I'm sure. I just assume they're like movies. the Captain America podcast, mm-hmm. Warcraft podcast,
Secret Life of Pets podcast,
Sausage Party podcast, Sausage Cast. We got to get better than them. We got to get all your friends listening to the show. So direct them to iTunes, and you can leave a review and then update it, like our friend Not ATK, who said, "More embarrassing every time I come back. 2-star review." I missed this one. This was updated in the last 5 minutes. Oh my god!
Whoa!
Not ATK says, "More embarrassing every time I come back, though not as embarrassing as the Slash Film Cast." Oh, come
on. Wow.
Just wrong. A double slap. Our friends at the Slash Film Cast are very bright and sharp. And
I don't know if the Slash Film Cast guys listen to this, but if you do, guys, we've got a battle going on.
We should combine forces and take down these naysayers.
That's true.
Or create the ultimate podcast that they would not want to listen to. but the one I was going to read was an update. It says, "Great podcast." It says 3-star review. And it's from Sean from Jenny's Block, who says, my previous one-star review with only David Ehrlich in the body of the review was a bit mean. Yes, it was. But we didn't take it too badly, at least not all of us who are not David Ehrlich. Instead, I'll just subtract 2 stars for him since he's not all that bad. He's just not the type of guy I'd want to be friends with since it might end with me in prison, and I wouldn't do well in prison. I'm just glad David's here, not here to defend himself. He is in Telluride.
Yeah, seriously.
He's the
right
Telluride
in, David.
Film Festival, covering that for IndieWire. So you can yell at him. He flew himself there and he's having an amazing time gawking at Rooney Mara or whatever you do at Telluride Film Festival. Mm-hmm. Well, Katie, those are all our reviews.
Yeah.
You didn't leave one while you were gone, but
I've not
left
a review. If I'm being honest, I have not really listened to the podcast, so
Jesus.
If I repeat anything, I know. I listen as we'll discuss. Pop culture life on maternity leave can be very cut off.
Well, I expect many of our listeners who have newborns to leave reviews that say that they use it to put their kids to sleep, and that maybe you should do the same.
My husband, Michael, has very specifically told me not to listen to podcasts around the baby so that he doesn't have to, like, listen to talk radio to get to sleep.
3 out of 10 scientists say that Fighting in the Worm is the new baby Einstein. So consider the podcast.
I'm sure those are reputable scientists.
Well, let's get on with it because we're about to talk to you about your baby. I just said about a bunch of times. About baby.
Mm-hmm.
Katie, you've been gone for a while. You've been gone. But you're back.
I know. I had a baby 9 weeks ago today as we record this.
My God. Is it intrusive to ask what that was like?
It wasn't too bad, you know? I'm trying to think of whatever the pop culture... Having a baby is not really like the movie show you. As in the very last few weeks, my coworkers were all kind of afraid of me because I think they were worried I was going to, like, go into labor in the elevator and get trapped. Or, like, my water was going to break in the conference room. And none of those things happened.
They've seen too many movies.
Yes, exactly. No, it is really not the way it's depicted in pop culture. It's a, you know, you kind of have a lot of warning when you know that you're going to go in and have a baby. And
you did not have a Neighbors 2 moment.
No, there was no, Neighbors 2. God, that came out this summer, didn't it? It feels like a really long time ago.
Your baby was not born then.
There were no feet sticking out of areas where they shouldn't be. You know, he was born on July 5th, so it was the very end of 4th of July weekend. I saw you just mere hours before going to the hospital, eating barbecue. So that's what
which
it's like to start
irreparable
going labor.
Damage to your child. Will
yeah, no, yeah, yeah. All the barbecue that he ate in your presence really damaged him.
Here's what I imagine: you have a baby, you get to stay home from maternity leave. Now, yes, there are a lot of things that you have to do to take care of this baby, but do you get a chance to catch up on television and movies when you sit around with a baby all day, making sure that it lives?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely imagine myself, like, I'd heard so many people say that they watched all of The Sopranos on maternity leave, or like they caught up on Breaking Bad or whatever else. And I really imagine, you know, I was trying to pick a TV show. I'd actually picked Silicon Valley as my show that I would catch up on. And because the baby came very late, I finished it before he was born. So we kind of needed something else. And I was, you know, in the first couple days, like, you're just like, the sleep is so crazy. Like, I was sleeping and then up so many times during the night. Like, sometimes he would wake up at midnight and not go back to bed till 4, and then I would have to sleep during the day. And the sense of disconnect that you have from the world is really only increased if you're spending that time watching television. And there's people visiting, and we had family in town, so kind of figuring out how to have any pop culture involved in that is really hard. And then eventually, when I kind of got around to, like, wanting to watch a show, I tried for a couple episodes with Deadwood, because I have HBO Go, and it's one of the shows they've been kind of promoting for whatever reason, is like something to catch up on.
I think it's finally on HBO Go. It wasn't always.
Oh, was it not on it before?
HBO is weird because I think Amazon hosts all of their shows mostly, but HBO Go has been kind of trumpeting at least new ones. They've been doing a big push for Oz. Now, maybe that's because of The Night Of, but I think some of these are only just, or actually Larry Sanders' show is finally coming to HBO Go. They made a really big deal about it, but that's so weird.
That would be a fun one.
There you go.
So, yeah, well, so the reason I'm interested in Larry Sanders, because I started watching Deadwood and I found myself really not able to deal with the violence. And, like, I'm not that sensitive a person otherwise. Like, I don't cry in movies. I don't like horror movies, but, like, excessive violence doesn't really freak me out. And it wasn't, like, the blood in Deadwood. It was the, like, watching people suffer. Like, it really hurt me to see people suffer and be mean to each other. And I had to give it up. And that was kind of the first evidence that, like, oh, being a parent is going to make me consume things very differently. So I changed courses completely and have been watching Parenthood. That has been my TV viewing of maternity leave of choice, which I know a lot of people watch and just sob through every single episode and, like, wouldn't be able to handle it. But it's worked really well for me. Oh, I hear someone talking in the background.
The baby is coming to life.
Here, I'm going to pick him up and bring him close to the microphone.
Can we use your baby's first name, or is that an illegal maneuver? Charlie, the baby is coming to life.
Yeah, I think he's been featured enough on social media. Hey, Charlie, say hello to the microphone. And now he's going silent. Yeah, you can kind of hear him. I've been watching Parenthood, and that has been my pop culture.
So Parenthood. We never really talked about this show on
Finding War Room.
It was out of our scope. It was kind of the last. I was complaining about this the other day on Twitter that I'm just looking for a show where a bunch of people who are kind of regular just do stuff, and it's kind of maybe a little boring, but you love it for that reason because you get to know them. Is it that show? And might it be the last one?
Show.
Okay.
I don't know what's on right now. There's been all these really aggressive ads for the show This Is Us that's going to be on NBC in the fall.
It looks too weepy.
Parenthood is definitely weepy. Like, someone cries every single episode. Like, there are moments where people, like, look at each other and express their feelings. So the main characters of the show are the Bravermans. It's the Braverman family. And we say it's about the Everything Works Out Okavermans because there's all these different challenges, but they all kind of love each other and work things out in the end. If that's the kind of show you're looking for, like,
what
it does
the
it
main...
really well.
Like, what are the main arcs? Because I've seen Parenthood, the movie, the Ron Howard movie.
I've never seen it. I have no idea what that movie's about.
That's interesting. Well, I mean, it's about three families, and Steve Martin has a ton of kids, and he's losing his job. And then there's Diane Wiest, whose daughter wants to marry Keanu Reeves, and they're both, like, 18 years old, and she's going crazy. And then there are some other people that I cannot remember off the top of my head. But, yeah, they're all trying to... Oh, there's also... Amadeus, Tamulchi, who is the shit son, brother of Steve Martin, so the Steve Martin's dad is also involved. So there's these different generations all dealing with being parents and, you know, coming together and trying to, it does feel like the beginning of a TV series. Maybe
I was about
pilot.
To say, that's a pretty good description of the TV show. It's, you know, it's about these four siblings who are adults who all have kids and they all live in Berkeley. So they're all in each other's lives and their parents are part of the show. And, you know, you'll have like rebellious teenage kids, you know, have someone trying to start a business. And in the first episode, one character finds out he has a son that he didn't know existed. And, you know, eventually like one character gets brain cancer or breast cancer. One of them has Asperger's. Like it's a, you know, just various challenges that people face over the course of their lives.
But is it too close to home?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think in the very beginning when I first started watching it, like, you know, there were no babies in the very beginning, but, you know, someone was like, my son has this problem. And I was like, oh no, I have a son. But now sometimes it hits close to home, but now I can feel like I can engage in it just as the story, like kind of characters who I care about, like almost in a soap opera kind of way. But it's the vibe of it, the fact that people are like trying to do right by each other and the caring about each other and being good people in the world. Like that was what I really needed, especially like when I first brought this baby home, because like the headlines the week he was born were really terrible. It was the week that all those people were being killed by cops and then all those cops got killed. And I think just having some sense of like, I want to be in a world of people doing right by each other. I'm trying to do right by this kid. And now I've actually started. So we're about to wrap up Parenthood and I've picked up Jane the Virgin as the next show to watch, which kind of is a really different tone of the show, but it's like about people trying to be good to each other, which so much like prestige TV is not. Like I got three episodes into The Night Of and I'm still willing to finish it, but it was like so not what I was looking for right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of done with the anti-hero. This is my struggle.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so hard when you say, like, I want a show about people being good to each other. Like, that sounds incredibly boring, or like a sitcom. And it's really hard to have, like, elegant storytelling in that way. But, you know, I've been watching Friday Night Lights. It does the same thing. And Jason Kadams worked on Friday Night Lights and created Parenthood. So it's a, you know, similar DNA there. I guess this is me turning into a parent. Like, I just want more nice TV shows. But that really is what I want. So, I actually asked people about this on Twitter, like, a month ago and got some good recommendations. So I've got more to watch, I guess. But my free time is running out, so I'm not sure what I'll be watching.
Now, have you watched any movies? I mean, there's a lot of television.
Well, so I've been, you know, really scouring the on-demand options. I still haven't managed to watch Deadpool. I kept saying I was going to catch up on it because it's like the most significant 2016 movie I haven't seen.
Don't let Charlie watch that movie. He's so young. It's rated R.
Yeah, I mean, he does like watching television, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't know what he's seeing.
Colors.
I watched Morris from America, which was totally delightful. You want to talk about movies where people are trying to do right by each other.
We have not talked about this movie at all on the podcast,
yeah.
Sadly.
Have we
Can
not at all?
Fill people in what this is, because I will go to bat to the end of the day for this
yeah.
movie. I loved it.
Well, it was at Sundance, and I heard a little bit about it there, and it just came out. It's on VOD. I think it came out in theaters about a month ago. It's by this director, Chad Hartigan, who made This Is Martin Bonner, which was a minor indie hit. And he's made another title that I'm blanking on right now. And it's got Craig Robinson, who is Daryl on The Office, and he plays a soccer coach who has taken a job in Germany, and he's moved there with his 13-year-old son, Morris. And it's kind of just like Morris's coming-of-age story. Like, he's spending time at the local youth center, but he's a black kid in this relatively small town in Germany, and they really don't know what to do with him. They kind of expect him to be a member of NWA or a gang member or something like that. And he's really into rap, and he dresses in like I think he has a big Yankees hat on. So he's kind of like fitting the stereotype, but he's just this like awkward 13-year-old living with his dad and trying to live in this country that really doesn't have any room for him. And he's a good kid, and Craig Robinson's character is a good dad, even though he's kind of overwhelmed by it. And I don't know, was that a good description of it?
That was a perfect description of it. I mean, I think
I'm
music,
rusty on my movie descriptions. So.
The music's good. You have this kid, this kind of newcomer, Marquise Christmas. That's his real name. Morris
great name.
Gentry being his movie name. And he's got rhythm. He's got soul. He's like walking around this place, even when he's bobbing his head, walking the streets of Germany. We're feeling that. We're getting in his head just by watching him interact with music.
Yeah, there's a little bit of magical realism involved in that. You kind of see things actually from his point of view.
But I'm curious, as a new parent watching this movie, like, first off, Craig Robinson made me cry twice in this movie.
Yeah.
He has some moments where he's just trying to figure out how to discipline this kid. You know, he lost his wife, and he's trying to figure out if he'll ever, you know, get with a woman again. You know, he has a newfound relationship with pornography, just trying to like make it through this world. And he's out of place in Germany too, being this soccer coach, but he is struggling to discipline his kid, or at least put him on a path where he can make a life for himself. And rap is very important to both of them, and they kind of bond over that. But at some point in the movie, Morris takes like he just goes on a trip to another city, and he kind of gets lost, and his dad has to come and get him. And like, it's such a terrifying moment. If you were lost in Germany and didn't have a phone, like, what the hell would you do?
Yeah.
And that age, like 13 years old, it's just crazy. And it just breaks Craig Robinson's heart. And I don't know how would you connect that on a deeper level? Just like parenting. That's parenting.
Well, yeah, so much of the stuff that you see with parenting and pop culture for me is still pretty abstract, like as much as when I was pregnant. Like, I have this baby right now, like I'm doing my best by him right now, but he doesn't have a personality yet. Like, it's really hard for me to put myself in being like, what if you, like this baby I'm holding right now, like went to another city and then lost your cell phone? Like, it's really hard to imagine that. Not that it won't happen, but it feels so distant. So I kind of see it and empathize with it on this kind of really a similar level to before I had a kid. And I'm curious about how that will change as he gets older. And, you know, you watch someone trying to, like, you know, deal with a 3-year-old or something like that, and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's just like my 3-year-old. But I think I'm connecting to it on a slightly different level, but not as different as I might in 10 years.
Well, you better start vetting movies for Charlie to watch down the road.
Know.
You need to collect, like, the gems of each year and pray that you can get them on Blu-ray or something.
Oh, God.
A hologram disc or whatever will be the thing.
What are the gems of 2016 that I should show him?
I don't know. Well, David, Joanna, and Dave, I believe, on Storm of Spoilers eventually, all are flipping out over Kubo. I've seen it too. It's very good. But that's, I don't know, that's definitely skewing older of the, you got to be at least 11 to see Kubo. I don't know. What's really young? Secret Life of Pets, we all missed. So we'll have to go back and see.
It's a big hit, right?
Your child will love a talking animal at some point. Which talking animal will it be? I guess
is
the big question.
Yeah, David has sworn by my neighbor Totoro and says that's what I have to do. So that's an option.
That's true. It's about little girls, so it'll actually make him empathetic to the entire human experience.
Well, there you go. When you have a white boy, you kind of have all pop culture available to him.
You probably should go way out of his comfort zone.
It's funny for me thinking about like what I saw as a little kid. It was like all Disney classics and then like random musicals, as I've talked about on A Quarter Quell. So I mean, it's going to be so long before he understands anything. So and you're kind of supposed to not let them watch too much TV early on. Mm. It'll be an interesting balance. Oh, there is. I do have one good. I have gone to the movies once, which is a thanks to the Nighthawk, which is Brooklyn's, currently the closest thing Brooklyn has to an Alamo Drafthouse, though there will be an Alamo Drafthouse in Brooklyn at some point. But anyway, they have, you know, food and drinks at your seat, and they have a weekly screening that they open up to people with babies. So I went and saw Mike Birbiglia's Don't Think Twice. Have you guys talked about that at all this
week? We have not really, but I it hit me very hard. I don't know loved it, but it's a very affecting movie.
Yeah, well, were you ever in an improv troupe?
I was. Yeah.
I know you took improv classes.
Yeah.
You don't like admitting that?
I don't know. I live in New York, and I was in an improv troupe once. The grass is green, the sky is blue.
I mean, what's lovely about that movie is it's kind of about like watching your friends succeed and grappling with your own sense of success. And I don't think you have to have been in an improv troupe to kind of get that. Like, we've done that watching, you know, friends become like really well-known movie critics and people quit the business. And, you know, I think every industry has something like that. And it's really, you know, well-realized. The performances are really good. I like Mike Birbiglia's tone, like in his stand-up and storytelling and is so far in his two movies. He has a nice, sympathetic, realistic vibe about him that I like.
Yeah, there's a moment towards the end of the movie that is on par with like Brutus stabbing Caesar in the back, just like vicious blade murder, where one of the improv people says, "You don't have it," to another one. And it just like, I died a little inside. But you know what? Now that I'm thinking about you and your child, I feel like career isn't everything. Not having it or whatever that is. Creative pursuits aren't actually not the end all be all. And you've produced a child. So that's, whatever you think, that's a good thing.
Well, maternity leave is a very good time to convince yourself of that because, like, you know, I don't have a job right now, but I do have a job. And, like, I get to go back to my job. But right now I'm just like, oh, I can just stay home and just focus my life on this child. And I don't need the rat race anymore. And eventually I will.
But, you will. You'll hunger for it.
Right now I feel like I'm above all of it. It's great.
Well, we look forward to checking in again with Charlie when he either wakes back up or in a few years when he's older and can join us as a guest.
He's kind of vaguely awake right now, but I think he's said all that he has to say for this episode.
All right, Katie, I'm going to indulge you in our mini segment. Yeah, and I don't know if this is actually indulging or not. This might drive you nuts.
I was just talking about how I don't pay attention to work anymore. You just go right up my alley.
Exactly. So you have another podcast called Little Gold Men, and you've been taking a break from that, too. And Joanna has also filled in for you on that.
I know. Joanna is... I promise... If I'm ever going to get All About Eve, it's going to be by Joanna.
I was about to say, she's not trying to replace your life. but to indulge that, the Oscar season is officially afoot, especially with Telluride happening. Toronto is happening later this week. There's already been Oscar controversy, and we're looking back hoping that there are good movies behind us, because in front of us there may not be a Best Picture ahead. Who knows? Everyone has a raised eyebrow at this season. So I'm curious, armchair Oscar critic, which I guess is, or Oscar prognosticator, which is everybody, from your bungalow, your fortress in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Less informed than most Oscar pundits.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Point. What's reached your ears, and what's looking like a contender? What's not looking like a contender?
I mean, I confess that I think the controversy you're referring to around Nate Parker, I've really kind of happily been like, nope, not going to read about it. Don't need to know this yet.
Yeah,
I'm sure that I will at some point. And I haven't seen Birth of a Nation, so I don't, you know, I haven't tuned into that a whole lot yet. But I was really excited to start hearing about Telluride, both because that festival looks incredible and everyone who goes there just looks like they're having like the best summer vacation of all time. And because the movies that it consistently gets are really great. And I don't know, I've been so psyched about La La Land, and I've been like hesitant because I thought Whiplash was fine. Did you love Whiplash? I can't remember.
I really liked Whiplash.
Okay. So Damien Chazelle, director of Whiplash, has this kind of homage to old school movie musicals with Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, the best part of Crazy Stupid Love, obviously. You know, this pair who have never been in a good movie together, but have kind of been the best thing about their movies. I mean, Gangster Squad was a disaster, so whatever. Nothing was good in that. And apparently it's great. Like, even David liked it. And I'm really excited about that.
Mark that one off on the bingo card, I guess.
I mean, I am such an easy sell on some kind of glossy musical, but yeah. David isn't. So the fact that he really liked it really gave me hope.
I'll be curious. I'm very excited to see La La Land, and obviously the trailers have been really, they look really cool. But I do wonder, there's a lot of people who spend their days on Twitter kind of complaining about nostalgia and remake culture, and especially with the takeover of Stranger Things on Netflix.
Oh my God.
People love Stranger Things.
Even I watch Stranger Things.
Yeah, well, hey, there you go. Charlie approved. You know, people are kind of down on the, we're just cannibalizing old pop culture and creating new pop culture out of it. And it has its pros and cons. But for me, I'm just like, is La La Land just going to be that for the artier or golden age Hollywood crowd? It still seems very nostalgic and very pastiche. And I don't know. It just, it doesn't seem like a stretch for anyone.
No, it definitely seems like a pastiche, but it's not like we're flooded with a ton of like homages to 30s musicals. Like Stranger Things kind of bugged me because it feels like culture is nothing but 80s homages all the time.
Totally.
But if La La Land is going to try to do something different with stars who have the charisma to back it up, like, and also, so I've seen Damien Chazelle's first film, which happened to play at the Tribeca Film Festival 1 year when I was covering it. It's called Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench. And it's this kind of, it's a similar vibe, like this old school kind of exuberant musical with tap dancing, and that I just love that genre so much. And I can say, as someone who loves that genre, it's not being served much in Hollywood, so maybe La La Land can do it.
Yeah, I'm curious. So at Telluride, it was La La Land and Manchester by the Sea popped at Sundance, and again at Telluride. That's gonna
yeah,
play
still
at
dying to see that.
I'm trying to think, you know, the big narrative of last year was Oscars so white, and like, what's going to counteract it? So what the troubled narrative of Birth of a Nation, at least from a Oscar standpoint, which is about the eighth most important thing about that. But,
yeah,
you know, that was going to be a big deal and kind of a sea change for the Oscars. What are there hopefuls? Oscars will not be so white this year, right?
Well, again, I know very little, but it does sound like Moonlight is maybe the answer to that.
All
and
right.
That's something I'm sure David will talk about when he's back in, because he when he saw it, he texted me just because I had asked to kind of be filled in on what it was like. And he called it the Black Gay Carol, which was from David.
Everything
like
must be filtered through Carol.
I don't think he loves it as much as Carol, but I think I guess the vibes are similar. And I have not read much about it, but it sounds like a fascinating movie, and it has black people in it. Hallelujah! Because on it, like, if Birth of a Nation had flamed out and then it was just all white people again, and everyone's like, "Well, the one black movie didn't work," like that would have been. I mean, it still could happen. So
I just wonder if
that
it's
will
too,
be embarrassing if it happens.
If it's too small, and like a very hopeful for Loving, the film.
Yeah.
From Jeff Nichols.
Jeff Nichols. It played at Cannes.
Kind of played cool at Cannes, I feel like.
Yeah, and it came out like maybe, or it played at Cannes maybe less than a month after Midnight Special came out, and also was like,
Yeah, I'm hoping there's an upswing there. And I'm also pretty hopeful for Fences, the August Wilson play turned into a movie by
Denzel Washington. Is directing it, right?
Yeah, and starring with Viola Davis. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a knockout, but I'm also like, well, Denzel Washington has directed two movies, and neither of them were very good. So I'm hoping.
Wait, what are the two movies he's directed?
Antoine Fisher and The Great Debaters.
Oh, yeah,
neither of which made
debaters.
A huge splash, but
Great
I don't
Debaters,
know.
Which I believe features Birth of a Nation director Nate Parker.
Oh yeah, there you go.
I think he's.
It's
in
all
that.
Coming back. Everything's connected. So I'm very hopeful for that movie because the source material is obviously a knockout, and so is Viola Davis, and Denzel is a great actor. You know.
So I hadn't heard this thing where everyone thought the movies coming down the pike weren't going to be good enough. So I guess
I don't know. I'm sizing it up for like fall preview stuff, and I'm not sold. I'm just waiting for, you know, Deepwater Horizon and Mark Wahlberg's movie with Peter Berg. Is that, you know, these things are not exciting me on a personal gut level. And when I stand back and I'm like, oh, what could go all the way to Best Picture when I'm having that one person conversation with myself alone in the bathroom in the mornings? You know, that's where I have great Oscar conversations, by the way.
Did you read anything about Sully? How is it a movie?
Seeing
is
that, we'll have to circle back on Sully. We'll have to take a crash landing with Sully next week because they have not screened it for New York press yet. Some people who are going to festivals got to see it ahead of time, but I don't know. So reactions coming from people at the festivals, and I'm kind of hopeful. I like Tom Hanks, but Clint Eastwood, not a big fan these days.
I don't know what was the last Clint Eastwood movie I actually liked. I've just been like, every time I see a preview for Sully, I'm like, how is this a 90-minute movie? It's like a 45-second flight. And, you know, the point of the movie seems to be like, is he really a hero? And the answer is, yeah, he is. Like, everyone knows he's actually a hero.
The one major takeaway seems to be, if you're scared of planes, this is not the movie for you. But who can say? We have to see it.
Well, you lived here back when that happened, so, you know, we've been dealing with that PTSD for a while.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get there. Don't jump ahead of my podcast plans here, Katie. We'll talk about living the Sully moment. But to wrap up here, any shot-in-the-dark Oscar predictions for you? Is there something, like, coming down way back in January that you're like, you gotta put some money on this one?
Oh, my God. Here's my dark horse. I'll Sing Street. That was another VOD movie that I finally caught up with. And it is so charming. And it's got great music. And I hope that it gets some original song nominations. I mean, I nominated for Best Picture based on what I've seen this year. But maybe
True.
Original song is the thing to hope for.
Well, we will. What's the name of the song? Drive It.
Drive It Like You Stole It.
Drive It Like You Stole It. The way we record this podcast.
Yeah. So, yeah. Go rent Sing Street if you haven't seen it. It is crazy charming. So after doing some backwards math and looking at some old journals, I figured out that on September 8th, 2006, I moved to New York City. And so that would make this week the 10-year anniversary of me living in New York, which is crazy.
Congratulations. This is the episode about getting older. All of our listeners love this episode where we're talking about being old and having kids.
Well, didn't people get sick of us being like super youthful back in the early days? So now maybe they like us better because we're mature.
Doing shots and being hungover fighting in the war room was a lot more boring than aspirations.
Actually, thanks to Facebook on this day, I learned that it 5 years ago today or this week was our live show. So
we should do a live show again. That's another.
We should.
That's I mean, if people want us to do a live show, they should tell us and then champion that idea and then push us to do it and tell us where to do it so that the most people could come. I'm just throwing it out there. Right? It's not like I have thought about this at all. But
we should reclaim our youth by doing another live show. This is like the ultimate like old people thing to do. Like, do it again, man. It'll be great.
Yeah, just like Bruce. Anyway.
Yeah, but maybe Dave would come to New York for a live show.
Oh.
So anyway, I moved to New York to work a part-time job at Film Journal International, which is a publication for movie theater owners. It still is in existence. My boss from then is still there. It's a lovely magazine that was a really great way to start off with a job. Like, I was the editorial assistant, but it was a, you know, it's a small staff. So I was writing movie reviews. My, the first review I wrote was for Catch a Fire, which is a, I think Philip Noyce directed movie. I should have
Tim Robbins?
Before I started talking. I think so. I remember Tim Robbins and Derek Luke. Philip Noyce directed it. You know, it's about terrorism and apartheid era South Africa. So I knew so much about that. I'm sure that review is still online and I really wouldn't want to read it. But I was able to go to screenings and like, you know, catch up on Oscar season like really quickly, which was so lucky for a 22-year-old who had moved here for a part-time job and knowing nothing. Oh, there's the baby again.
Drink.
Yeah. Vamp for me while I put the pacifier back in his mouth.
Oh. No, I refuse to vamp.
Okay, so I started working at Film Journal that fall. And, you know, that was my first Oscar season. That was my introduction to the world of critics. Like, I would go to random screenings for stuff that I think now I totally wouldn't take just because I didn't have a lot of money and didn't have much else to do. So I got an invitation to a screening of Amazing Grace, which is a movie about the effort to abolish slavery in England. And I went and saw it at the Broadway screening room and took a young man on a second date there, and that is my husband.
Whoa.
And he never lets me forget that I took him to see a, you know, relatively boring movie about abolishing slavery in England. But it has a great cast. It's got Ewan Griffin, or however you say that, Benedict Cumberbatch, Albert Finney, Michael Gambon, Rufus Sewell, Kieran Hines, Toby Jones.
Everyone who was doing period English films at that time.
Oh, yeah.
And still
it's
is,
like,
pretty
it's,
much.
It's like pretty much the whole crowd.
Wow.
It's crazy to me that it's been 10 years that I've been on, like, screening invite lists and, like, knowing where the Broadway screening room was.
Privilege, you mean. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, yeah. I mean, the year before I had lived here as an intern and I had, like, you know, gone to the Angelica and gone to Film Forum and, like, you know, the Lincoln Plaza theaters. And again,
now talk about that. That's what I want to, like.
Oh, yeah. So, well, so I guess what I was setting that up for was that, like, most of my life in New York has not been doing that. So I kind of feel like I've missed, like, an essential element of it because I've been in this career for most of the time that I've lived here.
But what was.
Luckily.
You know, we often talk about the New York movie going experience, trademark.
As being terrible.
No, well, not as being terrible as well. David will tell you that the only place you should live if you want to see movies is New York City, but that is clearly not where most people listening to this live, and we often are knocked for talking too much, being New York snobs about movies. But I'm curious, you know, where you were going to college or where you grew up, you know, watching movies. Did it feel different coming to New York, like an epicenter of culture? Was it a big change? Or, like, how did you watch a movie back in college in the middle of nowhere, and then how did you watch a movie in New York?
Oh. I mean, I think
what
watching
movies... What
was the
last movie you saw in college before moving to New York?
Jesus, that's a good question. I have no idea what the last movie I saw outside after college. I mean, watching movies and TV is a big reason I came to New York. I think that is true for a lot of people. Like, you grow up with these images of the city in your pop culture, and you're kind of told, like, it is the city to move to. And I fell for it really big time. Like, you know, I think about seeing even Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind when I was in college, and, like, the fact that so much of it takes place on the Long Island Railroad. You know, the celebration of the entire New York City metro area. I watched a lot of Sex and the City. Like, even the movie Serendipity, which I saw when I was in high school, there's a lot of really good New York location shooting in that. So there, I mean, moving to New York, a lot of my first couple years were kind of spent being like, oh, this is the place from that thing. Or, you know, I, you know, walked through Central Park and you remember the scene from Home Alone 2 or Serendipity or... name a real movie that takes place in New York, not this nonsense that I keep pulling.
Midnight Cowboy?
Sure. Is there a scene in Central Park in Midnight Cowboy?
Oh, maybe not in Central Park. Smurfs?
Or like in a, or, you know, you go to Columbus Circle and Taxi Driver, there's a, you know, the political officer, Sybil Shepherd work is in Columbus Circle and Taxi Driver, and it looks totally different now. So, you know, that pop culture landscape for New York, I mean, I think New York has that better than anywhere else. And if you buy into that stuff, which I definitely did, it's such a thrill to live here and be into that.
Yeah, it is an interesting mystique to kind of pierce when you move here. You're walking. I was just describing one of my fondest New York movie going moments, which I feel like I could only have in New York, could not be replicated anywhere else. It was seeing The White Ribbon, the Michael Haneke film, on a very, very cold night in Midtown Manhattan, so that the wind in Midtown Manhattan, the wind funnels through tall buildings. And you've experienced this in any other city if you live there. But that night, I was just like, I was watching German children become corrupted by evil in black and white, just like blowing my mind. And then I walk outside and it's a thousand icy daggers stabbing my face. I'm like, this is life, man. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And I love the cold, and I love New York cold. And so many people flee it. But that's what New York movie going is for me. Cold.
Well, I know that New York is not the only place where you walk out of a movie and you kind of feel like the world is in sync with the movie you've experienced, like your head has changed and you're, like, experiencing whatever you've just seen. But it definitely works that way. Like, because you're out on the street, you're around people, like, you can kind of really be lost in your thoughts while you're leaving the theater, maybe more than if you were driving or, like, not being surrounded by people afterwards. So I agree with that, while also wanting to give credit to other cities that I'm sure provide that experience.
Other cities. Who needs them? Now, Dave is on the podcast.
Hi, Dave.
Just suddenly.
Yeah. And I can come and go as I please. It's like at will Beetlejuice.
I was thinking you're like the people in the paintings in Harry Potter, and you just move from place to place.
That's exactly good, but that's not, like, not complete people if you've read Cursed Child.
Merely
fragments of souls?
I did read Cursed Child. That was another pop culture thing I participated in this summer.
You've done a lot. You've done a lot this summer. But Dave...
Been home a lot.
Here's a question. You live in Denver now, but you came to New York from Colorado. So how is the movie going experience different? Did you have a quintessential New York movie moment that you don't think could be replicated in your now hometown?
Did I have a quintessential New York movie moment? Yeah. I think that it's a good place to immerse you in specific types of movies. So, I mean, unless you're born in, like, an urban setting, for someone like me, like, seeing Cloverfield in a city was like, I suddenly had a different idea of scale than I would have had. Like, I like, you know, people who listen to the podcast know I love Godzilla movies growing up, so giant monsters weren't like weird to me. But walking out of a theater that was like a movie from that perspective into that like neon, you know, corner of 14th Street and like knowing that trees could be monsters was really interesting. And that also goes for, I think, my first like holidays I spent alone in New York. My brother came down from Boston. We were both talking about like not going back home, and we both watched Elf together. And for some reason, if I wasn't living in New York, it would have been like another stupid movie to watch. But we both really got, you know, like we, you know, went to the mean East Coast and found the soft center of it for the holidays, part of it. So it's always been that. I don't think that there's like a theater going experience that's specific to New York that I haven't seen replicated in like Los Angeles or Vegas or anything like that.
What about it? So you and I both did something miserably mediocre and escaped home and went to college in New York. We were like Felicity or something.
Yeah, a lot of people brought up Felicity when I was in New York.
Yeah, so we went to NYU and we had some weird movie experiences because of the people who could float through our lives. And it's a very particular thing to New York. No matter where you live or what school you go to or what you do in New York, you can wind up at a movie where, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is there. You can just get a free screening and go see Arnold to introduce Terminator or Genesis. If that's what you want in life, that can happen no matter who you are, if you're in the vicinity. But being at NYU, we had some even weirder experience. I'm curious if you had anything that happened to you at NYU.
Oh, like my like absolutely weird film going experiences.
Yeah. Or maybe just a movie that you saw.
I've got a good one for this.
No, a movie you saw enough. Just at a, you know, in college, especially in New York. It's like, it's a crazy time. You're absorbing so much. So I don't know if anything.
I mean, I remember I was wandering down to get some pizza at Two Boots Pizzeria, and they were like, it was around Halloween, and they're like, hey, we're playing like a joke horror movie in our theater because they have like a theater downstairs. And I was like, why not? I got nothing to do. And I ended up watching The Triple Exorcist, which is a porn movie.
No,
set to the plot of The Exorcist, which is hilarious, but is without a doubt a porn movie, and no one told me that.
What does she spit out when her head? Never mind. Never mind.
I mean, it's no. It's still like green stuff, but it gets caked on her so that during the next scene, she's mostly, you know, covered in green.
What
vomit.
Does she use the cross for? And you know what? Never mind. Never mind.
Again, you know, basically the same thing, but it's not as violent and therefore horrifying.
Well, David, David used to review porn though, so I feel like if anyone is going to have seen The Triple Exorcist, it should be you.
Oh yeah, and I met Joanna Angel after that occasion, and she's like, "This thing called Triple Exorcist." I'm like, "Funny story, I actually have seen Triple Exorcist
while eating pizza in New York." My God, that's a New York story.
That's a really good New York story.
That's a New York story.
I have two favorite New York movie experiences, and both of them were not in private screening rooms. But first one, the most recent, was seeing Star Wars: The Force Awakens and The Last Night of the Ziegfeld, which was really fun. There was a Fighting in the War Room listener was there and recognized us waiting in line for popcorn, which was, and I'm sorry that I've forgotten his name, but thank you for
tweeted
talking
us.
To us. It was so fun. It was such a great crowd. And like Dave was saying, like these crowd experiences can be replicated in a lot of different places, basically anywhere you have an enthusiastic crowd. But the combination of that and the history of this, you know, old movie palace that basically don't exist anymore in this city was really fun. And then the second I was thinking of was the New York Film Festival premiere of Inside Llewyn Davis, which was at the Avery Fisher Hall, the really big one on the corner at on Broadway. You know, Inside Llewyn Davis is a great New York movie, and you know, it's this very thoughtful, interesting movie to see. And then at the end of it, there was a homeless man, or not, maybe not a homeless man, but clearly somewhat imbalanced, who had taken off his shoes and was harassing people throughout the entire screening. And I watched him being frog marched out the door at the end of the movie screening.
And his name was Llewyn Davis.
Exactly. He was sitting next to my friends throughout the screening, and they had great stories to tell about what he'd been up to throughout the whole time.
It's funny that you mentioned the Ziegfeld, which is now out of business, sadly, RIP, because I had an experience. I saw Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull there, and I thought I had a very New York experience there, too. It was not a collective burst of joy. It was a collective booing in agony. I don't know. There's a certain, when you get a rowdy crowd at a New York movie, especially the biggest theater on the planet, felt like at least, there's something special about all just being enraged at the same time. And
what about the end of our Independence Day Resurgence screening just a few months ago, where someone said about the end of it and said, "Fuck this movie."
That is true. I don't think we ended up reviewing the film on the podcast or talking about it. But yeah, we went to see this movie on opening night for some godforsaken reason. And yeah, someone just got up at the end and was just swearing up a storm, demanding their money back and just screaming. This was the Court Street Theater in Brooklyn, a palace for this kind of reaction, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it's got the liveliest crowds.
I've seen all the Transformers movies there.
Will you come back for the next one just to see the Court Street?
I mean, I might as well at this point, but then that's also locking me in for like the next, what, four?
No, Michael Bay will outlive you, so it's probably not a good promise to make.
Going back to Court Street to see another transforming robot. Back in my day, they transformed into boomboxes.
And racist, whatever those cars were.
Indeed.
Oh, God, what are those names? The twins. Anyway,
I don't know. Jackson Jizz. Who cares?
Jackson Jizz.
Is that Transformers 2 that happened in?
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
The half written. There's like a whole secret history of Hollywood just based on what guild is on strike that's like really explains a lot of shitty movies that just like make it to theaters. But that was a writer's strike movie.
How lucky we are for not living in LA. This podcast would be so much worse, you guys, if we all lived in LA.
We'd have better guests.
That's probably true. I have to tell two stories, or maybe three, because the first one is seeing Polar Express drunk off my ass, which was a great experience, stumbling in from like one of my first bar experiences, stumbling into Polar Express. That was a true New York moment for me. Oh yeah, it was fantastic. There were kids around me. I smelled. It was great. the second one, going back to what I asked Dave about an NYU experience. Look, NYU was amazing. I got to see Wes Anderson's new movie, and I got to see The Aviator, hosted by Martin Scorsese. You know, some legit films with people in tow to talk about.
I saw a movie hosted by Martin Scorsese at Wesleyan. So,
really?
Boom.
Anything's possible anywhere in this country.
He showed America, an Ilya Kazan movie that's really good. Anyway, that was his little bit of film education at Wesleyan.
Well, I wanted to
I thought we were just all bragging. We're going
bragging. You are bragging. Go, brag.
Oh, I saw Jesus's Magic Sarah Silverman cut.
That's
where
awesome.
She and Louis C.K. were there. So I think it was like the notes session before that movie came out.
You might win.
But that's a movie you want to see with a college audience
You might win. I saw Brett Ratner's After the Sun, starring Pierce Brosnan, with Brett Ratner and Woody Harrelson being interviewed. And
you know what? I'm going to look back when I die and be like, I'm sad I didn't meet Brett Ratner. So you might win.
Exactly. And it was it was a small room with Brett Ratner showing his film, and the Q&A, him and Woody Harrelson are high off their asses. Like, you know it. And then who interrupts the Q&A and walks on stage? David Blaine, street magician David Blaine, who proceeds to goof on all the questions, does not know answers about the movie at all. He has nothing to do with the movie, by the way. He also performs zero magic while on stage. He's just there to goof. All three of these guys are goofing. And then after the movie, I walk out of the theater onto A Street or whatever, and Brett Ratner gets into a black SUV, Woody Harrelson gets into a black SUV, and then David Blaine, nope, he just walks through the streets of New York, like kind
David
of
Blaine
tiptoeing
back into the crowd.
Yeah, I thought he was going to walk into another dimension or something. It was pretty amazing, and I felt like that was quintessential New York in some ways.
Yeah, but, I gotta kind of tally these up for myself so that when I'm old and boring, I can remember the things that I got to witness.
Well, now you have this audio recording for your future.
I know, and I'll tell Charlie these are the things that you keep me from doing now because you were born, and I have to stay home and take care of you.
Yeah, but back when I a few years ago, I used to like run into Bjork by accident. Now look at me, and then he'll throw up on you.
Oh, did God. I run into Bjork?
When did you run into Bjork? Did you run?
I don't think I did.
I ran into Bjork.
You still have a chance to run into Bjork.
You could run into Bjork, but probably it'd have to be your kids ran into each other at this point.
Or run into Bjork during daylight hours when I go to Manhattan and interact with the world.
Well, don't physically run into Bjork because she'll beat the shit out of you.
Her swan dress will poke you in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Great timely joke.
Yeah, it's to hang in Chad something.
Speaking of 10 years. From now.
Dave, the beginning of the segment, I moved to New York exactly 10 years ago this week, so that was the occasion for this conversation.
Yeah, this is not totally out of the blue.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think, a good prompt. Like, we're not full of ourselves, and we're not talking about New York as this mecca, as sometimes it is considered on this podcast. I think we're talking about it as a place of experience tied to the experiences we have, right? It's you don't see a movie in New York. You see a movie in New York, and it's different.
Yeah, I mean, I think anywhere that you live for a long period of time, you collect experiences like that. I mean, I think New York has probably more weird, adventurous movie screenings than many other cities, but, you know, everyone's got, like, you know, I have great stories from my multiplex from where I grew up in high school.
Oh, yeah. Or, like, the first time I saw IMAX 3D was in the Luxor Hotel in Las Vegas, and it blew my goddamn mind.
Wow.
I once bought a ticket to My Dog Skip and then went to the mall with my friends, which I was not allowed to do. That was my big story from home. But the real point of this is we want to hear from you guys listening. You can go on fightingintheworm.com or Facebook or wherever, tweet it. But I want to hear stories that could only happen where you live and where you see movies. So we're not totally full of ourselves. We're celebrating Katie's 10th anniversary in a place that she lived. You're now a New Yorker. You're now a New Yorker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
God.
I'm sorry.
God,
you're a New Yorker.
Long, huh? Yeah. And now I'm a Park Slope parent walking around with a stroller. So those happen at the same time, unfortunately.
You're going to turn into The Intern starring Anne Hathaway.
God, I wish. How nice would that be? I want that house.
It'd be a great house, a great job, a true Park Slope existence. It's totally not whitewashed.
That's how you know you're a New Yorker when you see a movie just to envy the real estate.
Jesus. This is the podcast about getting old. But yes, to wrap up, send us your stories because we always want to hear them, and we'll hopefully share some at some point. I'm Tipper Newsboy. That does it for this week's Fighting in the War Room. We'll be back probably next week. We might not get to Sully, since David is going from Telluride to Toronto and hopefully not having his plane crash in the process. I hope I didn't jinx him. Hey, if it crashes, it's not going to crash. It's going to land in a body of water thanks to the next Sully Sullenberger.
Can I ask Katie something as a New Yorker? I was there when the Sully thing happened.
I thought we were going to talk about
that. We were, but now it's going to be the extended conclusion part of the podcast.
I was also here when that happened.
Yeah, so, but, like, we weren't that hard on him, right? Because the previews make it look like we were, like, out for his blood, and I don't remember
being angry.
This is the thing that baffles me about this movie, is it seems to be saying, was this guy a hero? And the answer is yes. Everyone knew, like, he saved all those people's lives.
I don't remember reading any controversy about, like, he could have gone to the airport, he could have made it. I don't remember any of that. I do remember taking pictures of it and, like, standing, looking at, like, the frozen
there's ice on the river.
Yeah, taking pictures of it. It was just so madness. The sight to be seen, but...
Yeah, but I think everybody was instantly like, that pilot is a genius. And, like, as soon as they were like, shit flew in the engine, everyone was like, all right, cool. But, like, the movie makes it look like we put him on the Central Park 5 trial or something.
Well, I also don't remember talking about it for that long after it happened. Like, it did not seem like a big deal. I feel like the news cycle, you know, a weekend. We were done with Sully. No one talked about Sully.
Oh, really?
Got a bunch of medals.
Oh, I feel like I remember talking about it for a while, but, you know. Like when there's a subway hero or something like that. Like when crazy things happen in New York, I don't know, people talk about them.
We were more interested in the bird in the plane. What was that all?
Yeah, well, they killed all those birds in Prospect Park after that.
What?
Yeah, they euthanized a bunch of the Canada geese because that's what flew into the engines, and all the planes, like the flight path to LaGuardia, is over Prospect Park.
What the fuck?
Why weren't there a whole bunch of Harambe memes about that?
Where's the animated talking duck movie about fighting back against the euthanizing...
Remember when they euthanized us because of that damn pilot?
Quackatui. I don't know.
Starring Tom Hanks.
Oh, boy. So, Sully, yeah, that's coming out, and we probably will mention that next week, since some of us will have seen it, but no full review, sadly. Dave, you have another podcast coming out this week, right?
Yes, we have a thought bubble coming out this week. It's been a while. Right. We do a crossover with the Storm of Spoilers. So basically, if you're following any of the feeds at fightinginthewarroom.com, you're going to see that pop up.
How the fuck do you cross over with a podcast that two of you are already on?
You put it in multiple feeds, that's how.
Oh, I see. It's all marketing. Bullshit.
That's right.
Well, that's our podcast.
Buy more free things.
That's our podcast for the week. Why don't we tell them where they can find us?
Like I was saying, you can go to fightingthewarroom.com, hear all of our podcasts and stuff. We've been going for a few years. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. I'm Dave Gonzalez, and I write geek.com.
Hey, you also wrote for Thrillist.com last week.
Oh, hey, I've also been, like, killing it basically Stranger Things on Thrillist.com for sure, and then maybe something in the future too.
Even Vanity Fair had to share that article. That's how big it was.
Wow.
Know it.
Oh,
know it.
Is that my cue?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so I'm Katie Rich. I'm still barely on the internet for a couple more weeks while I can get away with it. But eventually I'll be back at VanityFair.com. And I'm on Twitter at Katie Rich, K-A-T-E-Y-R-C-H. I'm checking Twitter more than I probably should. So I'll probably be there talking about something. And you can find all of us, including me, on Facebook at F-I- or at Fighting in the War Room. I usually don't do a Facebook page. Where, as Patrick said, he's posting more of the episodes and the conversation continues.
And you can follow Charlie, the baby, at Uldan Baltus.
Exactly.
And I am Matt Patches. I'm on Twitter at Mr. Patches. I'm the senior entertainment editor of Thrillist.com. And you can answer this week's lightning round question because we'll retweet your answers since we're not doing a review segment. And I'm going to, I should ask Dave what it is because he wasn't here earlier, but I'm going to force him to answer or to read the lightning round question and maybe even answer it. Dave?
In honor of the wildlife, a Belgian-French animated retelling of Robinson Crusoe that's apparently coming out this weekend. What's a weird, lesser-known kids movie that you loved as a kid? I am going to go with my high school gem that I liked. It's a stupid romantic comedy called 8 Days a Week, where a child gets a crush on the girl across the street and decides to stay in her front lawn until she dates him.
Nice.
Creepy. Creepy.
Hell yeah. But, you know, lovable. And then, and if you pause it at the right time on the VHS/DVD, there's Carrie Russell side nipple.
Oh my god.
So check it out. Felicity.
Have a good answer for this.
And that does it for this week's Fighting in the War Room. We'll talk to you later. Ain't got 8 days a week. 8 days a week.